This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Brine Field Services leader, Zelandes. Check them out at Zelandes.com. That's Zelandez.com. It's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another episode of the Global Lithium Podcast. Today is episode 183. There is no guest. The bulk of this episode will be my presentation at the Future Facing Commodities event in Singapore last week. I have put up the slides that I used in that presentation, or at least most of them, on my website, globallithium.net/articles, and it's at the top, so you won't have any trouble finding it if you would like to see the slides that I refer to. I am not usually, when I present, a reader of slides. They tend to be props, but I probably went more according to the slide deck this time than normal. In any case, you can avail yourself if you so choose. Let's get to it. Given the massive largesse I have just received from who I called yesterday the Angel of Death, when she came to kick us off the stage after the panel, I'm going to start off with a bit of trivia, and I don't want to throw my friend JP under the bus because he did talk about the Sony battery in the 90s. That did not come from Hombre Muerto. Later it did. The original raw material, because I sold it to Sony back in the day, that's how long I've been around, came from a hard rock mine in North Carolina. And when that mine shut down, we transitioned to Hombre Muerto. So he didn't tell you anything that was not true. I just wanted to give you that little additional bit of clarification. The original material that went into the lithium ion battery was hard rock mined in North Carolina, processed in North Carolina. And the reason I go through this is I want to take you guys full circle because America's trying to be a lithium producer again, but we were the original guys. So with that, I will get on with it. Last year I stood up here in a very different scenario. I called it the lithium decade, and I still believe it is the lithium decade. Absolutely believe that. But in any industry that's going to grow 10x in 10 years, and that's about what the numbers will bear out, in 2020, lithium demand was about 300,000 tons, and in 2030, by most accounts, it'll be at least 3 million. Anytime you have an industry that grows that fast, you have growing pains, and you have volatility. And that's where we are. I loved what the first presenter from Argonaut said about price. I completely agree with him, and we'll get into that. But I'm not here to tell you how to think, but I am here to give you some questions you should be considering. And that is where I will start. We've been through a ride in lithium price. It's been pretty dramatic. We've heard it referenced before yesterday and today with the first speaker. Lithium prices went up to 80,000. But why did we have that price bubble, and why do we have the drop in price today? And I would say to you that if we look at the panic buying that went on in 2022, and you have excess capacity all over the lithium ion battery supply chain in China, and that is going to continue to be a problem, is going to continue to set up volatility. If you spend any time in China, and I know a lot of people in this room have, and I have, I lived there for a while, what happens? They just keep building capacity. When you do that, and they started to drive the lithium price up, I never thought the lithium price would get to 40,000. That's how smart I am. And I sure never thought it would get to 80. When it got to 80 and peaked out Q4 of 2022, the lithium-ion battery supply chain was stuffed from cathode to
to sells, to packs. And what happens in China when they see the price start to ease and come down? They stop buying and they start living off the inventory because they think next week it's going to be cheaper. So why should I buy this week? And then we saw the rundown in price. The narrative became, well, high prices fixed high prices. Those high prices attracted lepidolite and low-grade ores and product from Africa. In some parts of China, they were even grinding up old ceramics that had lithium in it and trying to leach that out. So you had this whole setup. Was it oversupply because high prices fixed high prices? Actually, I had a guy named Andy Leyland on my podcast a few weeks ago, and I asked him the same question. Was most of the oversupply in 2023 inventory drawdown or additional lepidolite? Andy's not the only one that agrees with me that it was really more inventory drawdown and destocking than it was the additional lepidolite. And we have some of those numbers in a later slide. Then the next question you should be asking yourself, and I think we've already begun to answer it, is has price bottomed? I'm not going to say it has for sure, but I think it's going to happen this year if it hasn't already happened. And I think Ron talked about it yesterday, and it's been alluded to today. Albemarle followed on Pilbara's BMX auction with their auction, and the price is okay. Wasn't great, but it was okay. And it does seem like prices have bottomed. But that's a question that you need to ask yourself, especially if you're going to put money in the market. And Keith already talked about it. The Argonaut guy talked about it. I'll talk about it a little bit. But is the EV growth story still intact? You need to ask yourself that question, because the narrative, and coming from the United States in an election year, EVs have become a left versus right kind of thing. And it's very political right now in the United States, and there's a lot of stories about, oh, people don't want EVs, they're going to buy hybrids if they buy anything. The EV growth story is still intact. I'll show you the numbers. Keith showed some numbers. I don't want to beat it to death, but EVs are going to do just fine. You have to be comfortable with that, because the lithium industry is now completely tied to batteries. I'll show you a pie chart in a minute, but when I started, there was not a commercial lithium ion battery. And now it's really all that matters when you're looking at lithium demand. And then what's the cost curve look like going forward? It's going up. We'll get into that a little bit. And finally, we had the DLE guy on the panel yesterday. And that's a question that continues to be out there, is when will DLE make an impact? I think it will. I don't know when, but you need to be looking at that, because that really has the capacity now that you're getting companies like Exxon involved with huge balance sheets that can do whatever they want to do, that aren't troubled about raising the money to do DLE. If that goes, if I'm a small hard rock guy, I'm going to start getting very nervous. What are my assumptions? Henry Sanderson showed a nice slide yesterday about China's dominance of the lithium-ion battery supply chain. I completely agree with what he's saying. China is dominant, but there are too many suppliers in China right now. We have too much capacity, and that's going to continue to drive volatility. The first gentleman who spoke talked about it's going to be tough to supply this market, even if you have limited periods where it looks like oversupply, and I think he's right. But the battery destocking and restocking is also going to add to volatility, and you need to be watching that. I think BYD and CATL together, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I will say that I think they've done a great job of taking control of the lithium narrative as well. And I think that's the kind of thing. I think you need to be really skeptical about just about everything you hear coming out of China about what's happening. I think many of the analysts have been co-opted and tend to sing out of the battery maker's songbook when they talk about the industry. And I think it's a real concern. Capital intensity keeps going up. That's going to drive the cost curve. There's some Canaccord numbers that say that the average capital intensity has gone up 50% since 2019. I think that's close. But if you look at, and I'll talk a couple times about Thacker Pass today, which just got the big loan, and I think Scott talked about it yesterday. A couple other people referenced the $2.26 billion DOE loan that they're getting for Thacker Pass. Well, if you do the math on spending, the whole project's $3 billion. That's a pretty high capital intensity number. So that's going to continue to drive the cost curve up. And you're going to see that happening. And you're going to probably see it on just about every ex-China project that goes on. The capital intensity keeps going up, which is going to drive the cost curve up. Lepidolite, I think my friends from Arcane, they have a nice slide about lepidolite. I want to give them credit for that. I didn't use it in my presentation. But the lower grade lepidolites are probably at $25,000 a ton or more. So you can't have a consistent growth. You can't have 400,000 tons of lepidolite in the market if the lithium price stays at $15,000 a ton. It doesn't work. We're going to need an incentive price. And then the narrative on lithium has gotten so negative. I've been in the business, as I think I said before, 34 years. I've never seen sentiment this negative. It doesn't make sense to me. Because even at $15,000 a ton, historically, that's a pretty high lithium price. But the narrative now is all, well, it was 80,000. And that is one of the key takeaways I want you to have here, whether you agree with me or not. I want you to think about it, is there isn't a lithium price. The China spot price is not the lithium price. There are a range of lithium prices. Korea is the second biggest market for lithium chemicals in the world. Japan's third now. But in both of those countries, last year, the average price for, in Korea, lithium carbonate and lithium hydroxide averaged about $50 a kilo. Carbonate in Japan last year averaged $56 a kilo. And you can say, well, I don't like you to talk about averages. You know, where did you end the year? You ended the year in Japan at $40 a kilo. November was 35. October was 35. So the price fell 80%. On the China spot price, that's true. But when you start looking at the lithium industry, think a little bit deeper than what Reuters tells you the lithium price is, or Bloomberg NEF tells you the lithium price is. It's a range out there. When you talk about lithium price bottoming, there's going to be multiple bottoms because there's multiple prices. And you should think about that too. So what are my expectations? And I'm going to repeat myself. I'm going to say EV probably 20 times in this presentation. But I believe price bottoms this year. I'm not smart enough to know when that is, and I believe it will start to rise. I already told you about the Japanese prices and how different they are than the China spot. One thing we have seen this time around that we haven't seen in the past is that the major lithium suppliers have, whether their discipline holds or not, I don't know, but they have either taken capacity off or delayed projects to try to make sure the market goes the way they want to. And we've had Albemarle, SQM, Arcadium have all made moves to try to make sure that things stay in balance. And I think that's a good thing. We've never had discipline in the lithium industry. It was always about sell as much volume as you can. So to have SQM behaving in a disciplined manner is a fresh thought.
Zalandez offers technology and services that support both direct lithium extraction and conventional evaporation ponds. Minimize the environmental impact of your lithium site through Zalandez data-driven insights and tailored solutions for each extraction method. Go to Zalandez.com for more information. That's Zalandez.com. Before I take you back to the presentation, I am making these comments a week after I made the presentation as I put this podcast together. Just to clarify, when I say there's going to be multiple price bottoms, as there are multiple prices, prices are going to bottom at different times and at different levels. I think the bottoms in Korea and Japan are going to be much higher, obviously, than the bottom of the China spot price, which we may have already seen. I talk about that a couple more times in that presentation. Another comment is, I talk about capital intensity driving up the cost curve, and that will obviously happen. But when I did mention Thacker Pass having a higher capital intensity, you can listen to the John Evans podcast and get more detail. But they sit pretty well on the cost curve, even with a high capital intensity. So capital intensity does influence ultimately cost going forward, and especially C2 and D after the project's built. But Thacker Pass is going to be just fine from an OPEX standpoint and fit in nicely closer to the left-hand side than the right-hand side of the cost curve. And in the last week, the media in the U.S. has kind of gone ballistic on how well Toyota's doing with hybrids in the U.S. versus Tesla's slumping U.S. sales. And again, I'd just like to give you the perspective that what happens in the U.S. has some importance, but when I look at this market and when I say the EV story is still intact, I'm talking globally. And we see now that Tesla doesn't have the dominance that it used to. BYD had a great first quarter, and Tesla had a less than great first quarter. So I've said for years that Tesla is a story. It's not the story. And I think the results bear that out. But for all those people who want to think the EV sky is falling, I just simply don't believe that. And nothing that's come out in the quarterlies that weren't available to me when I made this presentation have changed my thinking on that. So let's go back to the presentation.
EV growth is going to continue. That's my core assumption. And if that doesn't happen, then I won't be here next year for sure. There's a lot of different numbers, EV numbers. I use Rho Motion. I think Anthony C. used somebody else's numbers yesterday. His number for last year was it was over 14. Mine's 13.8. It doesn't really matter. It was low 30% growth last year. Rho Motion says 2024 will be 18. I'll have some forensics on that number in a minute. The great thing about the fall in price was you're not hearing a lot about sodium ion right now in energy storage systems, because if lithium stays below 25,000 a ton, sodium ion is pretty much a dog that doesn't hunt, and it will have a very small niche. At 80,000 a ton, ESS wasn't going to grow. ESS is booming right now with lithium technology, and Rho Motion's projection for this year is roughly 200 gigawatt hours. You put a lithium intensity number of 0.8 on that, and basically it takes you four world-class projects, four Kacharis, which is in startup right now, to just do the demand for energy storage. So EVs are important, but energy storage is gonna be increasingly important going forward. Geopolitics. I come from a country with more than 340 million people, and we're down to Biden and Trump again. Sorry. Now, I'm not gonna get into that, because there's a breakfast tomorrow where I believe a gentleman's gonna talk about the US election. But a lot of things aren't gonna get settled with where EVs go in the United States until we have that election over and we can stop saying, well, Trump will kill the IRA. Trump's not gonna kill the IRA. It's not in his best interest, because most of the investments that'll go into batteries in the US are in Trump states. Trump's gonna start more oil drilling, and the environmentalists aren't gonna like that. But to paint the EV lens, I heard Donald Trump say last week on CNBC that I'm not gonna let BYD build in Mexico and bring those into the country. I'm fine having BYD build a plant here because I want the jobs. That shocked people. And I promise you, Joe Biden's not gonna ask BYD to build a plant in the United States, because that's not how that works. I'm not gonna get into other countries' elections because I know precious little about them, but there's a lot of geopolitics that are getting settled that are gonna impact what happens in the energy transition. I just unhappily am from the country that has Biden running against Trump yet again. What's the market look like? There are different people have different numbers for what happened last year. I have demanded about 925. Some people have a million tons of LCE. They're all pretty close. The important part about this pie chart, and I said something similar last year, if any of you were here last year, This used to be a beautiful, colorful chart. It is increasingly blue, and blue represents battery. Lithium has just become a battery-dependent business. And by 2030, more than 95% of that little pie chart will be blue. All you have to know to project where the lithium industry is going now is where our battery's going and how many gigawatt hours or terawatt hours are gonna be made. This year will be 1.2 terawatt hours, which if you put a lithium intensity on it, it yields about 1.1 million tons of lithium demand for battery. And that is significant growth, and I don't think you need to worry about where the industry's going from a demand standpoint. Most of the arguments that any of us have are about supply, not about demand. The EV, 18 million units, over 10 of them are China. That's the level of dominance, and I don't think that ends anytime soon. And I don't think it's a bad thing, I think it just is what it is. Europe, 3.8, the US, or it's actually North America, US and Canada, a little over 2. Maybe that doesn't grow as fast as people expected. I, for one, would love to see BYD's cars sell in the US, because if you really want ubiquitous EV adoption in America, if you let BYD in, then guys that can't afford Teslas could afford an EV, because they have EVs at every price point, and we just don't have that. Elon likes to say, in the negativity of the narrative, a lot of it is anytime Elon talks, that's what the story is, and Elon says he's in between two growth waves, because whatever they call their $25,000 model, whether it's the Model 2 or something else, until they have it, there's just not a nice car you can buy until they let the Chinese cars in that are at a price point where we're going to get huge adoption growth in America. And I don't want to make this America-centric, but it is the second largest car market in the world after China. There has been a lot of negative press about, you know, people talk about every perturbation in the growth of EVs in China. This is current as of the end of February. It's a sawtooth chart, but it's going in the right direction. I think people can just stop worrying about NEV demand and its new energy vehicle in China, and that includes plug-in hybrids as well. But despite the seasonality, and the China market is very seasonal, and people will read that, oh, the last 2 months sales were down, so the sky must be falling, but that's not the way China works, and that's a good indicator, the way that's a sawtooth, but the direction is up. Supply forecasts. That's where I say most of the disagreement in the industry about where we're going between now and 2030 is not about demand, it's about supply. And if it's oversupply, then there's a different price story than if it's a tight market. I'll refer to a podcast episode again. I talked to Andy Leyland and I said, why are the supply forecasts so bad? And he says, well, if you work at a big iBank, the job you don't want is going through all the PFS and DFS to create a supply forecast. So the new guy gets the worst job. And generally speaking, he does a bad job at the new job. And if you look at, I usually will pick on Goldman or Morgan, but I'm not going to do that today. You can take anybody and look at their forecast between now and 2030, and you will see projects on there and volumes in there where the project's not financed, and right now financing is going to get tougher and tougher until people have clarity on price, especially ex-China. And the Chinese analysts always put any Chinese project as being on time and ramping quickly. And trust me, it doesn't matter who it is. Lithium projects are always late, except for maybe JP's. I don't want to throw them under the bus again. And they ramp rather slowly. And if you're from WA and you talk about lithium chemicals, you've got Queen Anna and Kemerton as evidence of that. I was talking to somebody this morning. I said, go out on YouTube and look at the original Queen Anna video from, I think they were supposed to be ramped in 2019. And they haven't taken that video down, and I don't understand why that is, but they haven't done it. Increasing capital costs and lower price expectations, as I'll just repeat myself, that's really, it's going to affect financing. It already has. Everybody in America is just thrilled that Thacker Pass got that loan. Let me put that in perspective to you. Last year, I showed you a map of gigafactories. Keith showed one for Europe. There's a map of the North America. There's 25 or 30 gigafactories out there. Thacker Pass will take 3 years to build, another year to ramp, and it does one. A 50 gigawatt hour gigafactory will use 100% of phase one of Thacker Pass. So if America's gonna build a robust, or North America's gonna have a robust battery supply chain, there's gonna have to be a lot more investment than we are seeing now. Because you can't find another financed lithium project in the US right now. And even Albemarle reopening Kings Mountain, a brownfield, they've backed off on the timing of that. How does this happen? And if you can't build lithium projects, you can't have a China-free supply chain. That's pretty simple logic. Chile. Chile has a lot of potential beyond the Atacama, a lot of salars. Very much similar, there's a lot of potential in Argentina, but there's a lot of active projects in Argentina. But when Chile elected a communist leader and they changed their lithium policy, if you're going to develop, the Atacama was left alone except for SQM was basically forced because of the expiration of their agreement to do the deal with Codelco. And there's a couple other projects that are grandfathered, but anything else that's going to get developed in Chile is going to have somebody that's willing to give the government a 50% plus one share majority ownership and a carried interest. And from my perspective, there's only one country that will be willing to do that, and it's China. Chinese money will flow in, and I don't know if Boric will not get reelected and that those laws will change, but there's a lot of potential. And everybody loved the Chile story because they have a free trade agreement with the U.S., so they'll be IRA compliant. But if no Western company is going to be willing to put the capital in the ground, it's going to be a problem. The other thing that's required for new projects in Chile is DLE. And right now, there is no commercial DLE, pure DLE, out there. And until there is, you're taking one of your best lithium provinces and putting it on ice. When, whether it's Henry or any of the other people that have talked about China's processing lead, that story tends to be skewed to hard rock. Because WA hard rock goes to China, almost all of it, until the project, the Kwinana and Kemerton are actually at scale. But what doesn't get told in the narrative is that the brine projects pretty much make the lithium chemicals at the brine project or nearby. When you bring brine into the argument, China's processing lead is much lower than what people think. It's still major, it's 64%, but it isn't the 90 to 95% that people talk about when they only consider hard rock. So China's processing lead is going to continue to decline as brine grows. And I think that's an important point when you're trying to get a balanced view of what's happening in the lithium. The Western Hemisphere was very slow to put capital on the ground and still isn't at the speed it needs to be. But I like to try to paint a balanced picture that Chile is, nobody ever talks about Chile as being a processor because it's not the way they think about it. But if you're making battery quality at the site, then you're not dependent on China. This is my supply and demand number. People think I'm a wild lithium bull. I think it's a pretty much a balanced market until the end of the decade, where I think it's going to be hard to get to 3 million tons of supply. But the other point that's important here is that when you start operating at 90% capacity, you're going to have shortages. And what the analysts usually say is it's supply, demand, and if it's one LCE over, it's oversupply. That's not really the way it works. And because the supply chain is so low. Anthony C. yesterday during the panel talked about the lithium in his Tesla in Hong Kong. And when back in the day when he got that first Model S, I think it was mined somewhere or it came out of Hombre Muerto. It went to Bessemer City, North Carolina. It went to Shikoku Island, Japan. It went from Shikoku Island, Japan back to a Panasonic factory. It became a cell. It went to Fremont. It became a Tesla. And then it got shipped to Hong Kong. Lithium's got to travel a long way. The supply chain is really long, and not much is happening to change that. So you're going to have tight markets even when supply looks on a spreadsheet like it's in balance. These are Goldman's numbers. The only reason I point this out is because Goldman Sachs has very low pricing in, like they say, 2025. They've lowered the price to 10 bucks, and that's essentially on the back of what they think is going to happen in lepidolite. But their demand number's higher than mine, and their supply number's a little higher than mine. But Goldman has 2030 in a deficit. So most of the people looking at this industry going forward are not that far off. The only thing I really have a disagreement with, and that's why I rely on my buddies from Arcane on their lepidolite costs, but you can't have $10 lithium if your growth is in China's lepidolite that costs $25 a kilo to produce. And yes, there's some lepidolite that's lower than that, but it's a spectrum of cost, and that's something you need to keep in your mind. Canaccord, I'm much more on team Canaccord. Their undersupply is actually bigger than mine. There's gonna be market tightness, and that's gonna put price back up. The real question is, how high will price go? And I believe what the last cycle, the last 18 months has showed us is that there is swing supply. The lepidolite and the grinding up ceramic material and bringing in DSO from Africa, if you have another run up above 40,000, all that's gonna come back into the market and it's gonna come back in quickly. So I think we have found that there's a natural cap on a price run up. I'm not saying price will never go to 80,000 again, but if it goes there, it's not gonna be there for very long. And that's spot price because, well, let me show you an SQM slide in a minute and I'll explain what I mean. This is Albemarle's numbers. Albemarle's actually downgraded their 2030 forecast. Last year when I was here, it was 3.3, it went up to 3.7, now it's back down to 3.3, but in all cases, it's 10% higher than my best number, and it's about the same as Goldman's. The cost curve. Price is gonna be determined by the cost curve, and this is Canaccord's 2024 cost curve. All we've had happen in the last few years is the cost curve's got steeper. And it's not just Canaccord. Morningstar, Seth Goldstein's their lead analyst. This is their 2030 cost curve. He only has 2.5 million tons of demand because he says that he thinks it's supply limited, so it's not real demand. You can debate that number, but you go up to 20,000 in his numbers for lepidolite, which would keep price where it is because you still need an incentive. And the other thing I would say is price at C1, and I don't want to get into a lot of jargon here, but C1 cash cost is basically real cash cost. C2 is you add depreciation, amortization. C3 is you add corporate costs. And you have to have, it's C3 costs that really drive what people will invest, not the cash cost. Because when a market's growing as fast as lithium is, you gotta put capital in the ground, and you don't put capital in the ground when your expectation is to get your marginal cost back. Lepidolite, this is another number from Andy Leyland, Supply Chain Insights. Just shows in his mind, lepidolite is gonna be much more limited than Goldman thinks in terms of volume, but it's also C1 cost at 14.1. You don't build a lot of projects with lepidolite.
This episode is also brought to you by Mississippi Lime, your innovation partner for solutions related to lime and calcium in your critical mineral processes. Visit lime4lithium.com. That's LIME, the number 4, LITHIUM.com.
Price. Simple benchmark slide. Everybody knows this story. 80,000, to 13, I think, at the low point. But this is what I look at. The most transparent reporter of lithium prices is SQM's quarterlies. And this is the story I want to leave you with on price, is that in Q4 of 2020, SQM's LCE yield, and you can go online and look up the numbers yourself if you want, because they're all out there, all their quarterlies, was 530. It rose in 2 years later in Q4 of 2022, it went to 59. It didn't go to 80. In Q4 of 23, it was down to 16. I don't know what their Q1 number is going to be. I have a suspicion that it's going to be at least 16, because I've looked at the Japan or the China import statistics from Chile for January and February, and they're still around 16, and that's their low price. So what they're selling to Korea and Japan's at higher price. So that may turn up. So maybe we have bottom, but I'm not calling it yet. But my point is, if this is the low on the right-hand side at 16, it's three times higher than the last low. The cost curve's higher. You're not going to have a 530 quarterly report from SQM again in my lifetime. Morningstar. I guess I like Seth because we agree. He shows 2024 pricing by Q4 going into the low 20s. This is an old Albemarle slide, and there's a caveat on it. This was done when their forecast was still 3.7, but they made the case last year that pricing had to go to 20 in order for enough projects to get built. And even with $20, they only showed 2.9 million tons in 2030. So they said there would be a 800,000 ton shortfall. Now that shortfall by their new demand estimates, 400,000, but you get the picture. That's more than demand was in 2020. All things are gonna lead to higher prices. How high they go, I can't tell you. My thought is this year, price gets into the low 20s, probably in Q4. I don't know. That's my guess. But what do other people think? Canaccord. The last report I have from Canaccord, which is pretty recent, $16 in 2024, long-term 22. Goldman, 11. I don't think it's possible for them to be right this year because price isn't going anywhere near 11. And to average it down, the price would have to go to like 8. And I don't think that's going to happen. Next year, they said the price is even lower. And then their long-term is reasonable at 18. Macquarie, they're all over the block. Their numbers change more dramatically than anybody's in my mind, but this is where their last report was, and that's quite recent, UBS. But there's pretty much consensus that lithium prices have to be higher than they are today to meet the supply expectations. Closing comments. What do I want you to take away? Because I really, everybody needs to work this out for themselves, how they think about this. Banks are going to continue to try to force feed the commodity narrative. I said it last year here. I'll say it this year here. I know it's future-facing commodities conference, but lithium's not a commodity. It's a specialty chemical. The only people that can make it a commodity is the battery guys, and they'd have to agree on specs. You can't warehouse lithium hydroxide and take delivery. Specifications and approval, especially for electric vehicles, are an arduous process. And you just can't have a random warehouse full of lithium hydroxide that meets a certain spec because it has to be individually qualified. Excess capacity is going to keep driving volatility. This is not going to be a smooth road. I think you could see $40,000 or $50,000 lithium again between now and 2030. I hope that doesn't happen. I'd rather see a stable environment. But when the Chinese go back to buying and restocking, it could get ugly, and I do think it, once you get to 50, then the swing supply will come in pretty quickly. I don't think it needs to go to 80 for that to happen. But it did not happen in 2017 and 2018 when the price got to the high 20s or around 30. That was the high point of the last cycle, and you didn't hear people talking about lepidolite then. So it had to go higher for that to even be brought in. There is no shortage of lithium. All the lithium that's needed for the energy transition has already been found. Hasn't necessarily already been drilled out, But people will say, well, there's not going to be enough lithium for the world. Don't worry about it. There's plenty of lithium. And later on, there'll be recycling. Are you going to give me like 2 minutes from the time that we started early? Okay, thank you. She's so nice. There isn't a single lithium price. I've said it. I like to repeat that because people don't seem to learn that quickly. The China spot price is not the lithium price. It's a lithium price. And if you're going to invest in lithium, I will hearken again to the words of Anthony C. He didn't say it here yesterday, but I've heard him say it many times. If you're going to invest in lithium, do the work. It's not that hard. If you really want to dig into what's going on, you can do it. You don't need me. You can do it yourself, DIY. And then you can also listen to the Global Lithium Podcast and hear a lot of people that know a lot about this. I've got several people in this audience that have been guests. And with that, Chrissy, I leave it to you.
Are you sure? Cheng, thank you very much.
Really enjoy participating in that event in Singapore, as well as several other stops in Australia. I make it other times during the year. They're all managed by a group called Vertical Events, so a shout out to Stuart, AJ, Prue, and the voice you heard at the beginning and the end, that's Chrissy Morrissey, and she does a great job as an MC, so shout out to you guys. Had a really good time in Singapore. It is a wonderful city that continues to evolve. Travel is a great way to keep you challenging your assumptions about the world. I intentionally took a BYD car from the airport to the hotel. It's not that long of a ride, but it was long enough to realize that they make an excellent product. The driver was thrilled with it. He had owned the car for about a year, so it's, you know, you can hear all you want to about things, but you need to experience them. The first time I saw a BYD dealership was before they made EVs. It was when they were still just making ICEs, and that was in 2005. I had been doing business with them since 2000 on the battery side, selling them lithium carbonate and cathodic materials. When they bought the car company, I thought it might bankrupt them. It just shows you how wrong you can be. But I'm not the only one who's been wrong about BYD. Elon Musk said a lot of things that now look foolish as BYD continues to rise. Thanks again for listening.